Good coming.
All the Oregon House of Representatives Committee on Healthcare to order, and I'll start by introducing, by asking our committee members to introduce themselves, then we'll talk about what we have in mind for the process today, and I can tell you we're very, very happy to be here. Mr. Vice Chair, do you want to start us off?
Representative Ron Maurer, and of course I live here, serving House District 3, which is mostly Josephine County, and I want to thank the chair for the opportunity to bring the health care committee out of Salem and down south, and particularly down to Grants Pass. It is not very often that we get an opportunity. And just as a note, during the committee hearing, it's not appropriate to clap, but that was fun. I appreciate it. And as you will see, Mr. Chair, you're going to hear comments that are both pro and con, and everybody brings their opinion, but that's the way it should be. And unlike, the perception, we perceive Portland one way, and up there they perceive Grants Pass another way, and or Southern Oregon in other ways. And, in fact, we have multiple voices down here.
I thought you said Grants Pass wasn't a part of Southern Oregon.
It's the heart of Southern Oregon.
I got it. Yeah. Representative Thompson.
Morning. I'm Jim Thompson, House District 23, which is parts of five counties in rural West Willamette Valley. I'm very pleased to be here, and also want to thank the chairman for moving this meeting out. We're under intense pressure not to do these kinds of things because of budget restrictions, but Chairman Greenlick was kind enough to get us out of the big city into the rural. Appreciate that.
Vice Chair.
Hi, I'm Chris Harker. I'm from House District 34, which is in Washington County. It's mostly, well, it's about an even split between Beaverton and unincorporated Washington County. I've been there for 21 years. I have a wife and a couple of kids and a small business. Good to be here.
I'm Chris Garrett. I come from House District 38, which is Lake Oswego and part of Portland. And I've been, along with Representative Harker, we've been legislators for about 6 weeks. So it's great to be here.
They're old hands. And I'm Representative Mitch Greenlick. I represent House District 33, which is northwest Portland from the river, about 22 miles west to the rural lands of urban Washington County. So in my district is about 40% city, about 40% suburban unincorporated areas, and about 20% rural. So I have a flavor in my district for all parts of Oregon. And as you can imagine, we have lots of controversy about things that are important to you in my district as well. What we're going to do today is we are going to do a little business first, assuming we don't quite have a quorum here. We're waiting for two other members to join us by phone, which will give us a quorum. If that happens in the next couple of minutes, as we hope it will, we're going to actually do some work. We're going to hear some amendments. Oops. There we go.
There we go.
Hello?
Hello, is this Sandy?
It is. Representative Dembro?
Sandy?
Oh.
Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
Is the mute on?
No.
Hello?
Representative Dembro?
Yes.
Representative Cannon?
Yeah.
Can you hear? Okay, you can hear us okay? You guys talk.
Michael, can you hear us?
Yeah, we hear you just fine, Mitch.
Okay, Sandy speaks too softly. We're representing. We're introducing the committee, and it would be nice if you two guys would introduce yourself as well.
Okay, this is Representative Michael Dembro from House District 45 in Northeast Portland to Park Rose. And this is Representative Ben Cannon, 46, south of Michael's and parts of...
Okay, I was just introducing what's going to happen today. Now that you're on the phone, we're going to shortly open up a work session on House Bill 2058. I'm going to chair the meeting while we do the work session, and we hope we're going to pass this on. We'll talk about it in a minute. When we finish that, and we hope that won't take too long, we're going to move into a hearing on House Bill 2009, and Representative Maurer will take over the gavel at that point and help organize, help monitor that hearing. A few housekeeping things. If you have your cell phone on, please turn it off, not just turn it on silent, because some of the cell phones interrupt the recording system. This is being recorded. Are we streaming this?
No.
We're not. So, but this will this be on the archives?
Yes.
So it will be on the archives if you want to hear what it was you said by going to the website, and cell phones follow up that a little bit. This is going to be an enthusiastic group with strong opinions on both sides of the issue and in the middle of the issue. I can assure you all, you have friends on the committee, whatever your position is, because we represent a broad range of opinions in terms of the committee ourselves on the issue we're dealing with, and we're trying to figure out how to get the middle ground. But you don't need to worry about getting our attention. You have our attention. We're going to try and balance the testimony, so we're hearing both from people who are in favor of the bill, who are opposed to the bill, and who have tweaks they would like to make to the bill. We're beginning to move on this bill, and we will have a bunch of work sessions on it. So this really is the time for your opinion. Maybe when we go to it, one or the other of us may want to have a brief opening comment. Decorum would be nice. We are your guests here, so treat us like you would treat guests in your own home. Don't holler at us any more than you would holler at the, maybe when your kids come home from college. but we are going to be very receptive. Committee members, any comments before we move into a work session? Okay. I open a work session on House Bill 2058. Madam Administrator, will you work us through this, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2058. We heard the end of January, on the 28th to be exact. This is the bill that standardizes the health professional regulatory boards in a number of ways, in the appointment process, in the confirmation process, in the removal process, term limits, et cetera, et cetera. The Dash 2 amendments, which we have before us, is an amendment that changes the language in the original bill from a four-term for all boards to a three-term. The Dash 3 amendments, you'll recall we also had a technical request from the Department of Human Services to remove, there's certain language in several sections that reference boards that are housed in Department of Human Services. That's not accurate. This amendment removes that. The Dash 4 amendments, the committee had requested clarity on family members. This removes the language in the bill of family members and defines it as a spouse, domestic partner, child, parent, or sibling. And the Dash 5 amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's been requested that the board, the state board of the state mortuary and cemetery board, be included in the standardization actions that are happening with the health regulatory boards. The Dash 5 amendments do that.
And that's the governor's proposal for those.
Correct, Mr. Those Chair. Amendments. Now, I received early this morning just some language wordsmithing from the state mortuary board and cemetery board. Due to the timing of it, we are not able to conceptually consider those. I will pass this written testimony out, and should you decide to adopt the amendments, we will pass these suggestions off to the Senate side.
Yeah.
Also, one follow-up administrative thing, we have not received, as required, our fiscal impact statements. I did talk to the fiscal office yesterday. They have only received responses from about half of the boards as of yesterday. At this juncture, there is no fiscal or minimal fiscal on any of these amendments, but they were not comfortable issuing a fiscal statement declaring that. So should the committee decide to take action on all these amendments and our fiscals do not reflect that information, this bill will be back before the committee as a possible reconsideration. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm stepping a little out because I do want to pass this bill today. We can't imagine any kind of fiscal coming, and we'll know in the next couple of days. So if before we drop it, if there is a fiscal sufficient to require a Ways and Means referral, we'll bring it back and reconsider it. But I frankly can't see any possibility for that happening. So let's get a motion to put the bill on the floor, and then we'll talk about the amendments. We'll have discussion.
Well, I'll make a motion about the amendments.
Okay.
And we're going to prefer to do it as a block.
Yep.
So, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2058-2, dated February 9th, and the -3, dated February 12th, the -4s, dated February 9th, and the -5s, dated February 20th, be amended into House Bill 2058.
Is there any discussion? Well, I do. Before we open for discussion, I do want to point out that the executive of the Board of Dentistry has objected to us reducing their term of office for their board members from 4 to 3 years. It's a little, I think, a little late in the process, but I will suggest to them they'll have a chance in the Senate to straighten these little things out, and when we take it to the floor, we will point out there are some things that will be straightened out on the Senate side. Is there any discussion on the amendments?
No, Mr. Chair. I just the only comment I have is that this is part of a larger series of bills about the health licensing boards. And the chair decided to break it up into manageable pieces, and this one essentially standardizes some language because all of our health licensing boards were all over the map on what they looked like, and in fact it did cause some problems, and so this is a reaction to some of those problems, and hopefully this doesn't create more problems, but I don't think it will.
Yeah, and there's virtually no opposition to these things except the issue of the 4 and the 3 year board, I think, is the only one. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think that really, as stated by my colleague here, we're new to this process, but I think that these amendments have made some significant improvements and clarifications to the larger bill. So
great.
Much in favor of it.
On the phone, any comments?
Not from us.
Okay. Laura, will you please call the roll on the on the motion to adopt Amendment 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative
Denbro?
Representative Denbro? Can't hear you.
Aye.
Good.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Greenlick?
Aye. How about a couple of others, right? We need to call?
Yes.
Yeah.
Representative Bruin?
Excused.
Representative Kennemer?
Excused.
Representative Kotek?
Excused. Motion passes. Thank you. We're having an epidemic in the Capitol. It's like a pest house there. It's sort of like a nursery school, except it doesn't have either adult supervision or nap time. And consequently, at the beginning of the session, everybody is sick. Okay, a motion on the bill as amended.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2058 as amended be adopted with a due pass recommendation to the floor.
Representative Maurer moves House Bill 2058 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Did I hear you say?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Bruin?
Excused.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative Dembro?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Kenimer?
Excused.
Representative Kotek?
Excused.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye. The motion passes. I'll carry it on the floor. See if I can figure out how to deal with all the complexities that are in it. I'll have good coaching. Thank you very much. I close the work session on House Bill 2058. Representatives that are on the phone, you're welcome to stay with us, but if you can't, I know you have other things going on. I really appreciate your calling in to join us for this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're off to the floor.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're on daily sessions now. Tell them we all will miss it.
We will.
Don't tell them we wish we were there.
No.
Okay, I'm going to disconnect you now. They're gone. Thank you.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I open a public hearing on House Bill 2009. Okay. And on our first...
Vice Chair, may I make just a brief comment, please?
Yes, sir. Hold it. No, I have the gavel.
Yeah. I asked for your permission, exactly. This is a very complex bill, and there is a very complex set of amendments that goes with the bill that I assume most of you haven't had a chance to see. And in fact, we haven't had a chance to work through them on the committee yet to even know what's on the floor. Friday we have a work session to exactly do that, to work through each of the sections of the bill. The bill is 262 pages long, most of which are boilerplate. In Oregon statutes, you need to, if you change anything in the statute, you need to produce the whole statute in the bill. Those are known as conforming amendments. So consequently, most of this big stack of things are a place where we change the name Department of Human Services to Oregon Health Administration, cross out one, have the other, and then two pages of the statute that it's amending. There are about 50 pages that are relevant. The point that I want to make is if you have specific ideas of how to improve the bill, please let us know, but they may already have been proposed for improving it, and we may be on the way to do it with the amendments we have. But the concepts are important. We're anxious to hear from you, and we're anxious to hear from you both in terms of any technical matters of the Oregon Health Authority and issues of the provider tax and the Medicaid expansion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So the first group will be Roy Vineyard, Kelsey Wood, and Julie Imhoff.
Julie's already on another panel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Julie, you'll wait. Right.
You'll wait, because you're on another panel, ma'am.
I apologize. Didn't know we had duplicates.
Okay. Oh, and was there Angelica Rupee? Yes, thank you.
I'm in another set of papers.
Yeah. And my intent on this is to go back and forth, the for and the against, but please apologize. The list is really long, and I don't expect that we're going to get through everybody that signed up on the panel, because we are limited to noon. We have to be out of here. But we will do the best we can. And we ask people to respect people behind them and move through your testimony. If you have written testimony, we clearly accept that and, in fact, appreciate written testimony. And if you have written testimony, you don't have to read it verbatim. Summarization would be helpful. So who wants to go first? Yeah, Roy, why don't you go?
Microphone on.
Yes, and be sure to introduce you yourself by your name and where you are from.
Yes, good morning. My name is Roy Vineyard. I'm the president and CEO of Asante Health System, which represents two hospitals in Southern Oregon, as well as a number of other related healthcare entities, including home health, child development services, chemical dependency centers, home healthcare and hospice and outpatient pharmacy. I'm delighted to have an opportunity this morning to speak before this House Health Committee, and I wanted to comment on House Bill 2009 as written, particularly in light of the 4% tax on hospitals. And I thought it would be helpful to give a little bit of information around healthcare in the state of Oregon and contrast that a bit with...
Chair, may I comment?
Yes.
The bill, to point out, has a blank percent.
Yes.
But there is a proposal, as you say. It's the most current proposal.
Correct.
For corporate tax.
Yes. Thank you for that. So if I can give some compare and contrast and then a little information on what has happened in Southern Oregon healthcare as of late and what perhaps a tax proposal that is currently being discussed might do to healthcare in Southern Oregon, I would be pleased to do so. First of all, I'd like to say that there are 57 acute care hospitals in the state of Oregon. Asante represents two of those. There are 7,500 licensed beds. Asante represents 503 of those acute care beds, and 175 skilled nursing facility and long-term care beds, and an additional 14 beds for residential alcohol and chemical dependency treatment. Asante employs 4,000 employees in Southern Oregon, in Grants Pass, Medford, and surrounding communities, representing 3,270 full-time equivalents. The payroll for hospitals in the state of Oregon is $2.7 billion. At Asante, we are $250 million payroll for Southern Oregon. Medicare in the state of Oregon represents just under 39% of total payments to hospitals. For Asante, it represents 52%. Medicaid is about 11% statewide. At Asante, it's 13%. So Medicare and Medicaid combined represent two-thirds of our total charges. The commercial insurance business in the state of Oregon is about just under 45% of total payments. At Asante, it's less than 29%. In 2008, Asante provided $51 million in uncompensated care, an additional $11 million in bad debt, and $65 million in unpaid cost of Medicare, that is, additional expenses over what was reimbursed by Medicare. This is a total of $126 million of community benefit provided by Asante Health System. Our charity care and bad debt represents over 6% of gross charges and 13% of our net revenue. Now, a little bit more about Asante specifically. In 2008, the operating margin, net income, for Rogue Valley Medical Center and Three Rivers Community Hospital, which are the two hospitals in Grants Pass and in Medford, was 1.7%. Now, if you take Asante as a whole, all the other services combined, we had an operating margin last year, 2008, of a minus 0.4%. That is, we lost $1.9 million on our operations. In the first quarter of this year, 2009, our operating margin as a system is 0.45%, so a little bit less than one-half of 1%. In the first 4 months of this fiscal year, that is through January of 2009, Hearthstone, our skilled nursing and long-term care facility, will lose an annualized amount of $850,000. Our child development services will lose $416,000. Genesis, our alcohol and chemical dependency center, will lose $610,000. Our home care services at Three Rivers and Rogue Valley will lose a combined over $1 million annualized for this current fiscal year. Hospitals in the surrounding area rely upon Asante and Rogue Valley Medical Center in particular to transfer very ill patients to our hospital. Of Rogue Valley Medical Center's 15,000 admissions last year, 1,400 of them were transfers from Curry General Hospital, from Mercy Medical Center, from Sky Lakes Medical Center, from Lake District Hospital, and from MODOC, Sutter Coast, and Siskiyou General Hospitals.
Hey, Roy, can you push that microphone just a little bit?
A little further
away?
Yeah, a little bit too much feedback? Is that okay?
If they're in front of the speaker.
They're very sensitive.
Okay, let me move back.
That's okay.
Okay. So in January of this year, we were facing a gap of about $16 million between what we were budgeted for as a system and what we were looking at losing for the year as a system based on the first 2 months of our fiscal year that we're currently in, that is October and November. That's a $16 million gap. As a result, we did a number of things to deal with that. We froze all capital expenditures with the exception of two purchases. We normally spend about $24 million a year in new equipment, replacement equipment, and information technology upgrades. We announced a freeze on all non-mandatory travel and all education expenses except for safety education. There were no salary increases for anyone in management for this year. There were 20 full-time equivalents laid off in support areas of Asante. We also froze all open positions and all new hires and created a very rigorous process to look at replacing folks as they left the organization. In February, just about a week ago, as part of a more hospital-focused strategy, we announced the sale of Hearthstone, which is our skilled nursing and long-term care facility. We also announced that we were going to be selling both Rogue Valley and Three Rivers Community Hospital home care services, which employ 220 people in our valley. We announced the closure of Genesis, our alcohol and chemical dependency center. We also announced the closure of our early learning center at Rogue Valley Medical Center, which is a child care facility, and the retired senior volunteer program in Grants Pass. We restructured management and terminated 14 management positions, and with these closures, we'll have laid off an additional 80 staff, including those at Genesis and the Early Learning Center. Now, a couple of other things, and then I'll get to the tax and I'll be finished. Asante is the only provider of inpatient mental health services in Southern Oregon. We're the only provider with an inpatient pediatric unit in Southern Oregon. We're the only provider with a neonatal intensive care unit in Southern Oregon. We're one of only six certified stroke centers in the state of Oregon. We have the only comprehensive heart and vascular surgery program. Asante, between its two hospitals, Three Rivers and Rogue Valley, see over 70,000 emergency department patients annually. We also provide support for the three safety net clinics financially, and to Southern Oregon University and Rogue Community College for nursing programs to meet the current nursing shortage. As I mentioned earlier, we serve as a trauma referral hospital for nine counties in Southern Oregon and Northern California, and we are, I believe, the largest employer in Southern Oregon. Currently, hospitals pay about a 0.7% tax, and we've been paying that since 2004, and that is used to draw down matching dollars from the federal government to apply toward expansion of the Oregon Health Plan standard population. This tax was agreed to and based on a set of guiding principles that in 2007 became a memorandum of understanding that was signed by the President of the Senate, Speaker of the House, the Ways and Means co-chairs, the Director of Health and Human Services, and the Hospital Association. Those four principles were as follows. The hospital tax revenue will be returned in aggregate to hospitals in the form of higher Medicaid reimbursement. The tax we currently have raises about $40 million a year, and the state agreed to increase Medicaid fee-for-service rates by $40 million. I'll note that the governor's recommended budget has no proportionate increase in reimbursement to offset this tax liability. The second principle, any federal matching revenue derived from the hospital tax would be used exclusively to fund hospital services. Again, referring only to the governor's recommended budget, this would violate this principle by using the proposed 4% hospital tax to cover all costs of OHP standard. The third principle, hospital tax and the associated federal matching funds will not be reused to replace existing state funding for Medicaid services. That is, it's similar to the maintenance of effort portion in the stimulus package. And finally, hospital services and funding will not be reduced while the hospital tax is in place. Those were the four guiding principles upon which the current tax was based. John O'Connell did a study that showed that the provider tax, again, the proposed provider tax, would cost hospitals about $230 million. That's 25 of the 57 hospitals, the DRG hospitals, of which Rogue Valley Medical Center and Three Rivers Community Hospital are two. While it would cost hospitals $230, his study showed that $203 million would be returned to hospitals. And this was divided into three components. $95 million of this amount would be due to the expanded coverage and the rate increases in Medicare from 80 to 88% of Medicare costs. This, I think, is probably at least close to accurate. The next two components, I believe, are flawed in their analysis. $42 million would be recovered by hospitals because we can pass on the cost to commercial insurers. They already pay 130% of our current costs. $66 million would be saved, according to his analysis, because if we do nothing, the current provider tax that we pay sunsets on September 30th. So therefore, $108 million of this $203 million of supposed recovery is a combination of losses we are destined to absorb, regardless of what happens, and funds we can recover by raising our rates to commercial payers. Finally, within that study, there's an assumption that for every new dollar of revenue, the hospital's additional variable cost would only be 50%. This is extremely low and, I think, an unreliable piece of information. Asante Health System, I'm nearly finished, would pay about $16.1 million for this 4% tax proposal. The net impact, as we have calculated, actually as HMA has calculated, an outside consultant, would be a negative $11.1 million to our system. To offset that amount, we would have to increase Medicaid funding by nearly 53%, which would actually be well in excess of 100% of Medicare rates. Without an offset to this loss, Asante would have to reconsider many of the programs and services that it currently offers. I would like to suggest that while House Bill 2009, I believe, has many very good components, and I applaud the hard work that's gone into that, as well as the work done by the Oregon Health Fund Board, but I believe the basic tenets of financial sustainability are at stake here. And I would suggest that a much broader-based assessment be considered to raise the dollars necessary to draw down the federal matching funds.
Thank you. And who would like to go next?
Questions?
I would like to ask. Do you want to wait till the panel's over?
No, let's go ahead and
have at it.
I would like this. As you point out, the current system goes away so that those agreements go away in September.
Yes.
You and I have worked together long enough in a different setting to have a fair amount of confidence with each other. Let me ask you a question. If you would suspend belief for just a moment. Well, first let me say you have big problems, whatever's going on. I mean, you're going to have a serious problem in all these issues, as you point out. But
suspend belief a moment, and let's assume we could create a tax that included the tax on hospitals that would at least net you enough, because it increased Medicaid reimbursement and reduced uncompensated care, so that for every dollar you put into the tax, you would at least get that dollar back. If we could find a way to craft that kind of a model, is that something that you would be willing to support?
Yes, I believe it is. I mean, given the fact that we need to draw down these federal matching dollars in order to be able to cover more of the uninsured in our state, if we can find a way that it is not of a negative financial consequence to hospitals, and perhaps by sharing that amongst a larger base, I think that would be a sustainable situation.
Yeah, the underlying principle behind this is if we can raise $600 million in matching funds, we can bring in $1 billion in federal funds, which at 30 jobs per million means that we could use federal money that's already in our name to fund 30,000 jobs in the healthcare system, some of which you're talking about cutting off right now. So I believe the trick is going to be to see if we actually can create that kind of a model, if we can get into some discussions, so we can try and titrate a model that would actually at least break hospitals even across the board. And with your high proportion of Medicaid, it should be easier to get something that would work for you than would work for some other hospitals, yes. I think.
I would hope so, and I believe that those four principles that I discussed earlier would be a very important piece of that equation as we looked at what sort of a situation might create at least to break even for hospitals.
Well, principle two is off the table because the current tax isn't really a tax. The current, I think, principle two, if I remember correctly.
The hospital tax will not be used to replace existing state.
No, I was thinking about the whole federal match goes into hospital services in the old model.
Yes.
That, I don't think, is what we're talking about. We're talking about at least the hospitals pay a dollar.
Yes.
We get $1.66. We get the hospitals back the dollar, if we can work this right. And the other $1.66 is used to expand so we can get 100,000 kids and 100,000 adults into the system. But, yeah, the devil is in the details, Mr.
Devil's
Chair.
I tend to agree, but I also have to say, Roy, that it's not just about the hospitals.
Yes.
And that ultimately someone's paying the bill. And, I have been advocating...
Federal government, I hope.
Well, but that's still someone's paying, it's my money that's going there.
It's sitting back there, and it'll go to Alabama if it doesn't come here.
Well, maybe not Alabama.
Oh, maybe Mississippi.
Maybe Mississippi.
Maybe
New York. The point is that the provider tax is still on the table, and there's been benefit to it. The problem is we can't rewrite it that it's punishment. The hospitals are struggling today, and we can't write it so that it puts you out of business because the hospitals and the communities are important.
Yeah, nobody wants that. Absolutely.
Nobody wants it. But on the other side, someone is paying the bill. And I am sorry that the way House Bill 2009 is currently written, and we're trying to deal with this, is to not provide, not to pass this on. Someone is writing the check, and we're talking big bucks. And so, at the end of the day in the negotiations, I don't want to take a segment, whether it's a commercial payer, and throw them under the bus, just so, quote, the hospitals can be held harmless. Everybody is going to have to feel some pain, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, if there's any principle we've ever learned, there's no such thing as free health care.
Right.
Somebody is paying for it. And the question is, how does that amount get shared?
And we tend to throw certain constituencies under the bus. At the end of the day, everybody, is as a team, and all of a sudden it breaks down, everybody comes self-motivated, and it's, well, not me, throw someone else off the...
And that's the basic principle. Don't tax thee, don't tax me, tax the guy behind the tree.
Absolutely.
Chairman Greenlock.
Okay, let's move on. Roy, you took quite a bit of time, but you're also you represent a huge player in this dynamic here.
Just very briefly, one of the things that, if I may, One of the things that we hear periodically is that we can get out of this unsustainable situation we're in by recovering, increasing the cost we recover from the commercial insurers, et cetera. And then small business guy says, well, that's why my rates just went up 16% on all of my employee coverage that I provide to them. And, you know, that's unsustainable for me as a small business person. So we are all going to be paying some portion of this. I feel that side as a small business person, and I feel the pain of what you've just described in terms of the losses, and you can't make it up in volume. So
it is devastating. The fact that we now receive about 67% of our costs from Medicaid, I mean, you can easily see then how the cost is passed along.
That's got to stop.
Yeah.
And the governor's budget knocks that down to 52% or
yes.
That's got to stop. Okay. Let's press on.
Chairman, Representative Greenlick, Vice Chair Harker, Marr, for the record, my name is Kelsey Wood. I've been a small-town independent insurance agent for the last 27 years in Roseburg, Oregon. I was on the Oregon Health Fund Board Exchange Work Group. I'm an active member of the Professional Insurance Agents of Oregon Legislative Committee, the National Federation of Independent Business Oregon Leadership Council, and the Association of Health Insurance Agents National Legislative Committee. I want to support some of the amendments I'm aware of. I've seen some drafts, so I don't know exactly where they might be going, but one of the amendments to consider the exchange as a study would be something that I would favor. Most of what I'm going to say today is opposed to the exchange portion. First point I do want to make: in Section 25 of House Bill 2009, the statement, quote, legislative finding that existing health insurance market forces do not permit the market to operate in a cost-effective manner or to ensure the availability of health care throughout the state, with the recent published report, Health Insurance in Oregon, if you look on page 23, it'll show the historical administrative expenses to premiums of the health insurance industry from 2003 to present of only 7%. For page 28, the average premiums earned of $265 per member, that's a total administrative cost of just $222.60 per member. Comparing this to other things such as Medicare, these administrative costs are very low. This is a very efficient system. For example, a recent study on Medicare's administrative costs, the claims at maybe 5.2%, but Medicare's claims are $6,600, resulting in a total administrative cost of $343 per member. And this is not including CMS's management expenses, congressional policy management, nor revenue expenses. So compare this in the same study to the average private insurer's cost of 8.9%, which includes a 2% state tax. On the private industry, the average claim cost of $2,700. Private industry incurs $240.30 of administrative costs. Conversely, compare the state's own Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, their StatPAC report, page 14 of 47, showing the OMIF administrative costs of 4.7%, but on a claims per member of $9,529.57. That results in an administrative cost of $447.89. Or compare that to SAFE's own financial report, page 15, showing administrative costs of 26%. Oregon has a highly competitive, diverse, well-regulated, and efficient health insurance industry, as evidenced, again, in pie chart on page 18 of the state Health Insurance in Oregon report. As stated in the executive summary, page II, the health insurance market in Oregon is competitive, and purchasers have choices. Eight Oregon-based health insurers account for 91% of the Oregon healthcare market, with no single insurer earning more than 34% of the premiums in any market segment. Oregon contrasts with many other states in which a single insurance company is dominant. Not only are we fortunate to have a diverse and efficient health insurance industry, but per the same report, page 25, regarding underwriting gain, Oregon insurers decrease from an average of a 4% underwriting gain in 2005 to an average of zero in 2007. Results like these show not only an industry not overcharging consumers, but also evidenced in the same report an industry beginning to bear the strains of inadequate pricing by a beginning reduction in their surplus. So I question that, where is it in the legislative finding that the existing health insurance market forces do not permit the market to operate in a cost-effective manner? I also am concerned in House Bill 2009, designs of pure community rating and guarantee issue. As discussed in the Insurance Exchange Work Group, these two issues bring more costs to the table. I thought we were trying to find a system of lower costs. Much is talked about how many are insured as well. Again, according to the health insurance in Oregon, there are approximately 600,000 without health insurance, but 116,000 are under the age of 19. 233,000 are at or below 200% federal poverty level, leaving only 251,000 who can afford it but are currently choosing not to. And I wonder, how is the exchange going to address getting those to insure 250,000 to buy the insurance? Wouldn't a simple solution be to allow Oregon insurers to issue a low-cost policy free from mandates? Currently, over 30-some-odd mandates are forcing insurance coverage to be more expensive, such as proposed in House Bill 2608. This House Bill 2608 wouldn't disrupt state agencies, wouldn't disrupt a current healthy insurance market. It could be a voluntary issue. It could allow state influence and cost management features, and it would be a low-cost alternative. And we have this low-cost policy even to utilize things such as integrated health homes, electronic records, wellness care management, even replace the ill-used certificate of need, if not all of the cost savings features, much talked about by the author of Senate Bill 329, Senator Dr. Alan Bates. I ask that we back up a little on House Bill 2009, we not consider the use of an exchange, and we consider the use of the insurance policy, a lower coverage insurance policy, to deliver lower cost and maybe even more direction in lower cost benefits.
Mr. Wood, the one comment about a paragraph that you asked to be pulled out is, in fact, going to be amended out of the bill, and that's been agreed to. So, thank you.
Happy to hear that. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you. Yes. How are you?
Good morning, Representative Grinlick. Thank you very much, and all of you, for coming to speak to us today. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Angelica Rupi. And I'm the finance director for La Clinica del Valle, a community health center in Medford. We have four clinics and four school-based health centers. And last year, we saw 12,000 patients. Most of our patients are uninsured. Thank you for the opportunity to share our thinking regarding the need for healthcare reform. On the whole, Oregon community health centers were very appreciative of the Oregon Health Fund Board process and recommendations, and equally supportive of the House Bill 209. In respect to healthcare reform, in the reform process, we ask legislators to support payment and regulatory reform that would allow primary care providers to continue innovative efforts to reform and measure the impact of delivering patient-centered care, including the integrated health home or primary care home and behavioral health integration. Reforming the primary care service delivery system in this way is not only the right thing to do, it is essential to improving patient and provider satisfaction. La Clinica del Valle is going to be starting a whole new process in a couple months doing this integration that we're talking about. We're going to have in one of the our sites, a medical providers, behavioral providers, and dental providers, and doing this integrated model, which it will benefit our patients. Expanding access and resolving the revenue issue. Many factors in Oregon are leading to significant growth of our uninsured population, already among the highest nationwide. Double-digit increases in insurance rates, employer layoffs, economic pressure on those who purchase individual family coverage. Community health centers and other safety net providers absorb much of this burden. Community health centers have seen the rate of uninsured patients jump to 45% on average. in some clinics face over 90% uninsurance. Needless to say, many health centers are already on the edge of financial viability. We are often asked, what would be the impact on La Clinica if the provider tax went away and we lost 20% of our Medicaid revenue? Well, let me answer that. For us, 20% of our Medicaid revenue is around $500,000, which will equal a three full-time providers, which will equal a 3,000 patients. And those 3,000 patients, where they will go? We all know. They will go to the ER. And we know what the cost of the ER of those 3,000 patients will be. 10 times, 100 times more than if they went to a primary care home, to a community health center for the primary care services. In our view, the state must resolve the issue to ensure that we do not dramatically expand the number of uninsured Oregonians. We are already at a breaking point. It would be foolish not to maximize the available federal dollars. Oregon cannot afford to leave more than 2-to-1 in federal matching funds on the table. As you are well aware, this is close to $1.5 billion in federal funding. These funds could go to our local hospitals, community providers, and communities, providing jobs, preserving community infrastructure, and maintaining access to healthcare for our citizens across the state. We know that there are discussions right now regarding the provider tax, and while we are not privy to all that information, we urge you to craft a provider assessment or other funding mechanism that will reimburse our hospitals and safety net providers seeing low income and uninsured Oregonians. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah. Any questions? Okay. Next panel, I want to invite Julie Imhoff. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. Bev DeLeonardis, Nancy Korber, and Buck Eichler.
I handed the gavel over so we could deal with the hard names.
Yeah. And no disrespect, but in order to get through this now, we're going to have to 3 minutes. And we're going to, that applies to everybody, not just.
That's okay. That's fine. No. We have a lot of people.
Calm down. The more of you will get, no. The more we hold it to 3 minutes, the more of you will get to speak.
To speak.
That's right. So.
Yes. Please start? Introduce yourself and where you're from. Thank you.
Sure. My name is Beverly DeLeonardis. I'm chairperson of Rogue Valley Chapter of Oregon Action. I live in Central Point in Jackson County. I want to welcome you all here. Thank you, Chairperson Greenlich and Vice Chair Maurer and the rest of the committee. We're very pleased to come that you came down to listen to us about the health care issue in Oregon and the future legislation of 2009, HB 2009. Oregon Action is a grassroots organization that works with low and moderate income people. They come to us because they feel that they are powerless to change the system. However, the breakdown of our healthcare system has mobilized people to try and address this issue. We cannot afford to wait any longer. Oregon Action, with thousands of other Oregonians, asks you to adopt all the resolutions that the Oregon Health Fund Board committees recommended during the amendment process. Oregon Action has been dedicated to the idea of universal health care, and that's been since 2003 when we started with the human rights and degree. We have heard from our members and others about distressing stories over the years of people that have had to drop their insurance because the premiums and deductibles were so high they couldn't pay them any longer. Now we're reading in our newspapers that insurance companies are again raising their rates even though they show profits. With the loss of many jobs, we see the loss of employer-based health care system. We all know these facts, and that is why we believe that we have an opportunity in Oregon to create a new system that works for everyone. So we ask you to move quickly and create this new system. We believe that this new system should include choice. which means to us in Oregon Action, strong public insurance plan as well as a private insurance plan. We now show that the word may, as I learned this morning, is in the bill, in the amendment, rather than what we propose, shall. And so that's what we're proposing as part of the amendment. And the reason we do that is because public insurance gives the people of Oregon choice between plans, between the private and the public plan. And this would help us because private insurance companies, it would keep private insurance companies from raising their rates, and also it would give benefits that would be at the bottom, they would not go below. And we must rein in skyrocketing costs and help ensure economic security for all people living in Oregon, especially small businesses. They need a fair shake. They are the backbone of Oregon's economic system. Many of them have been unable to afford insurance for either their employees or their own families. This choice will bring fairness to the new healthcare system.
Thank you, ma'am. That's
was that 3 minutes?
Yeah. And do you have a copy of that?
No, I don't. But could I just say one more thing? I have a short paragraph which I believe we spoke about and we think is really important. We're getting a chance to maximize the federal dollars. We'll get back $2 for every one that we could help cover. And this will cover about 80,000 children and about 100,000 low-income adults. And we feel that's very, very important. So I would like to introduce Buck and Nancy, and they tell stories. This puts a face onto what happens when the healthcare system fails.
Okay. Buck?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you on this matter. And I'll try to be brief. I'll try to keep it to 2.5 minutes. For the past 18 months, I've been working with the Jackson County Administrator, Danny Jordan, on a joint project between the union and the management, trying to save our health insurance costs. We've made some progress. We've moved to more aggressive brokers that keep sifting the sands and looking for ways to economize while keeping our plan design something worthwhile. We have also looked at self-insurance, which has our employees have spent literally hundreds and hundreds of hours examining these things. One of the things we're finding right now is that moving to self-insurance, we may save $500,000 if our trend continues. From a $6 million policy for just the classified employees. So we're really working hard to try to contain cost and trying to make this work for everybody. But in doing so, we realize that we're trying to slow the rate of decay here. Where it's not a solution, but it's doing what you can when you can do it. And we're hoping that our renewal increases will go down from 10 to 12% annually down to 6 to 8%, but we can't go on like this indefinitely, and we know it. And I personally, we have people that are laid off. They can't afford the COBRA. Obama has just introduced some stuff that's going to help that, but it's just going to help it for 9 months. It's not a long-term solution, and of course, COBRA runs out too. I am personally a person who was just laid off last December 18th, and I am now in that position where I realized that, over a period of months, I couldn't sustain COBRA, so I didn't opt for it. I will pick it up under the Obama plan, but like I say, it doesn't last for long. There's a lot of things I'd like to share. I did submit some printed material. I hope you get a chance to read it, and I do thank you for your time. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Nancy Kerber. I'm a small business owner here in the area. I own a real estate company. And about 2 years ago, you all know what started happening with that market. And I have to say we had good reserves. We were in good position to weather the storm. No one knew this storm would be what it is. I had health problems last year. And I had a major medical plan that we paid dearly for. and it covered next to none of them. I ended up with thousands of dollars worth of bills. I'm still paying off. And we went to see a credit counselor last week. We still have good credit. But if we don't make some changes, we won't. And we don't know when this market's going to turn around. And because so many of my clientele are business people, many of them are in the same position. They call me up. They want me to sell their business. They want me to sell their commercial property. There are no buyers. Many of them are trying to figure out, just like we are, how are we going to weather this storm? And I don't think this storm, even when it does weather, is ever going to completely go away. We're not going to go back to what we had. And when I look at health care, I look at so one of the decisions we had to make this week was, are we going to pay for food? Are we going to pay for a major medical plan that does not cover my medical needs? And the next question is, am I going to continue to see the doctor so I can improve my health so that I can get back to work? You know, and these are the kind of questions you have to decide. And they're tough questions. And I don't know what the solutions are, but we need an affordable system. My husband and I do not use medical services excessively, and I doubt if we ever will. But when I need something, I do not want to feel like I'm going to lose my home, I'm going to lose my credit, I have to decide if I'm going to eat or not. And that's where we and thousands of people around me, I see, are in the same position. So I hope that this plan that is being worked on is considering those needs. And I thank you for all coming down to our community.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions?
Chair, can I just make a brief comment? I've been sitting on the Ways and Means Human Resources Subcommittee, and I think hearing these stories are important. But what I can assure you is that all of us in the legislature, regardless of what our general philosophy is, understand there's a face behind every decision we make. And I think it's something that our constituents help us remember, but I've been very impressed with my colleagues understanding. We sit and talk about cutting foster care and a variety of other things. And I think if there's anything we do realize is that these just aren't numbers on pages. They're really people, and we thank you for helping to reinforce that concept.
Yeah, and I'd like to say, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Temporary chair. And I'm new to this committee, as stated, but I place great stock in the stories we hear. There are stories that I can tell to some degree and the people around me. And I also have great faith in the work that's been done by your representative and Chair Greenlake during the last session, and all the people who are on put a great deal of effort into designing this system. It ain't perfect, and we're tweaking it now to make it closer to perfect, but I think we're on the right track here.
I'd just like to comment, you know, contrary to popular belief that we can make this clearly a party issue, and that does nobody any good. And, you know, I think the mantra of both parties is, in fact, affordable, accessible, and quality health care. The difference is the road we take, and maybe even the end state, is different. So I don't know anybody that says, I like high-cost health care, and I like inaccessible health care.
I like high-cost health care as long as I don't have to pay for it.
Well, you're right. Yeah. You know, and I like having the wrong leg cut on.
No, I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't like that. So, you know, the question clearly is about how we come up with the solution, and there are myriads of ways to answer that question. And so that's what we're struggling with. But thank you. I'd like to call up Lyle Jackson, Bob Lieberman, and Nancy Yonley. Is Bob Lieberman? I guess he left, I guess.
Okay,
go ahead.
Good morning, I'm Lyle Jackson. I'm the medical director of the IPA in town here, representing a good majority of the providers in the community, both physicians and nurse practitioners. My only comment is to In this community, the Oregon Health Plan works. The reason why it works is because it's local control, and that's because of that local control, there's a wide participation by all providers and a really a buy-in into what the Oregon Health Plan provides. And no matter how this process comes through, I think my request is you have a product that seems to be able to deliver quality, a good quality of care to a wide variety of the most needy in our community. And I would hate to see any basic changes in the Oregon Health Plan because access is so important, and you won't get good access unless you have local community support. So that's just my concern. And I think we've had a 10-year record of the Oregon Health Plan being successful, and to make some basic changes or drastic changes to it to fit another product, I think, is taking a needless chance. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Does MRFPA generally support the provider tax as proposed in 2009?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Lieberman. I am Executive Director of Southern Oregon Adolescent Study and Treatment Center, which is located, it's based here in Grants Pass. We provide intensive children's mental health services for all of Southern Oregon, with probably the plurality of children that we serve coming from Jackson County, but we also have operations in Coos County. We serve Curry, Douglas, Klamath. I'm really not here today to discuss the substance of the bill and the provider tax and some of the very broad policy issues that are contained in House Bill 2009. I'm only here to make a brief mention about children's mental health and the reality that we're facing in the children's mental health system in Southern Oregon as well as around the state. And, of course, mental health and physical health are pretty intrinsically linked, as we're learning through all the research and all the brain research. And so the children's mental health system is significantly underfunded. There's been some significant policy changes in how the system is designed that have occurred within the last several years. I personally was part of helping construct budget notes that made this children's system change initiative come into place in the 2003 session. However, those policy changes didn't have any dollars accompanying them. And as a result, we have a wonderful vision in the state system and many good things happening in many areas around the state. But we're pretty grossly underfunded. A recent independent cost study showed that the children's mental health system is from outpatient all the way through subacute, not acute care, but all the way through the subacute level is about 40% under the actual cost of delivering services. So as you look at House Bill 2009, you look at reimbursement structures for healthcare providers throughout the state, my simple request at this point, and I think I'd be speaking for the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs and the Oregon Association of Treatment Centers and other children's providers throughout the state, as well as Oregon Association of Community Mental Health Programs, all have supported that we look at adequate reimbursement for the children's mental health system at all levels. And it's not just nonprofit providers, community mental health programs, wherever those services are being provided. If we have any number of new enrollees without infrastructure to support it, we could be facing a real problem down the road. So it's just a simple kind of reminder or request that as you look at these very weighty issues, you bear that really critical piece for our children in mind.
Welcome to Southern Oregon. Thank you for coming. My name is Nancy Yonley. I have worked in the health field for approximately 45 years, from delivery to geriatrics, and about 10 years at the public health or health department locally. I am a wellness advocate, and historically, prevention programs are the first to be eliminated from almost anything. So I just have a little conceptual information that I want to share. And the statistics that I'm referring to are national, but they're proportionate to Oregon as well. I believe we need the choice of private and public health insurance systems. And reform can't happen soon enough. Two-thirds of adults are either overweight or obese. Fewer than a third exercise at least 3 times a week. 24 million people have diabetes. The vast majority of it is related to lifestyle. An additional 57 million are pre-diabetic. Despite decades of public anti-tobacco campaigns, 1 in 5 adults smokes. At this time, nearly 46 million Americans, including 8 million children, lack health insurance. Any plan, I believe, must place a strong emphasis on encouraging healthful behaviors and preventing disease. I believe it's time for Americans, all of us, to assume some responsibility for consequences of our choices. The reality is, getting Americans to move at all would be a good start toward health improvement, thus cost containment. Physical education should be included in the curricula from K through 12. Health club membership should be included as an insurance incentive as long as the individual continues activity an average of at least 2 times a week. Positive incentives offered for weight loss. Every year, an estimated 900,000 people die from avoidable causes because they fail to maintain a healthy weight, eat nutritionally, and exercise, or because they drank or smoked excessively. For example, that's roughly 40% of all United States deaths. Obesity rates for children have more than doubled in the past 30 years. Excessive weight is a significant factor in 4 of the 6 leading causes of death: heart disease, cancer, stroke, and diabetes. Obesity has fueled a 45% rise in diabetes over the past 20 years. Someone born in 2000 has a 1 in 3 chance of developing the disease. There are some successful models, a pilot project based on the Shape Up.
Your time, I'm sorry.
The Shape Up Summerfield study should be implemented in several Oregon communities, and those studies are available. That was Summerfield, Massachusetts. I hope you're aware of it, because when we have something out there that's successful, I think we need to take advantage of it. Want to say one more thing. Cost containment will not be possible without health prevention, health wellness programs.
Question?
Thank you.
Thank you, panel. Appreciate it. The next one, Julie Imhoff, Gaia Carney, and Kevin Marr.
The only exercise I'm getting these days is running up and down the stairs in the Capitol.
Which he does, right up to the fourth floor.
Got to do something.
Go ahead, please introduce yourself.
My name is Julie Imhoff, and I'm from Grants Pass. Thank you so much for coming here and allowing us to participate in this process. It's a real privilege. I have worked in the healthcare field. I've been a nurse for 45 years. Most recently, I was laid off due to financial constraints from a community health center here, a primary care center in Grants Pass. I have been volunteering as a SHIBA senior health insurance benefits advocate and as for a prescription assistance plan. I have seen the face of the poor here in our community who can't afford health insurance but don't quite qualify for Oregon Health Plan. People are getting desperate. Over the years, I've seen technology skyrocket, costs rise exponentially, access to patients in need denied, and healthcare reform stymied. I've seen medical community and healthcare consumer turn the reins over to the insurance companies. I myself recently have been told I need surgery, and all the arrangements were made, but I had the one caveat. We will tentatively schedule you until we hear from your insurance company. So it seems as if the insurance company is the one who's making the final decision on whether I get my surgery or not. That is, if they're going to pay for it. While we had our eye on improving technology and trying to make the free market system work for hospitals and improving and healthcare providers, we lost sight of what should be the driving force in providing care. Reasonably priced, quality healthcare defined by healthy outcomes. In no way have we been able to address health from a preventive, proactive standpoint, instead concentrating on reactive medicine. We are so busy chasing the cow now that it has escaped that we have forgotten to repair the barn door. When the Clinton plan went down in flames, we were told that incremental change was better than comprehensive health care reform. Better off to repair our current system than to risk too much change. I heard that here today even. Experience has taught us since that time that free market principles have not worked in healthcare. Continuing to tweak the system will lead only to higher costs and more complex, ineffective delivery of care. Incremental change is what brought us HMOs and other insurance boondoggles that have only further frustrated us and diminished the quality of our health care. We have poorer outcomes than other civilized nations, the most expensive system in the world, and a broken economic model. We all know the truism, insanity is continuing the same behavior but expecting different results. Medicare has the highest beneficiary rating of all insurance alternatives. I totally support HB 2009 as long as it includes a public plan option.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Gaia Parent-Chief Carney. Thank you, Chair, Vice Chairs, and members of the community for the opportunity to represent you. I've lived in Oregon since 1975, in Southern Oregon and Ashland specifically for 20 years. I am currently self-employed as a certified identity theft risk management specialist, but I've dedicated myself as a volunteer and activist for supporting HB 2009 as well as, and specifically the public health care option. Today I don't have written copies of what I'm going to talk to you about, but I will submit that at a later time. Today I'd like to edify you about a recent study that was done by Lake Research Partners about the public perception of the public health care option. I thought it was important that I shared this with you because a lot of what you're doing is political considerations, certainly with your constituents. I found the study very fascinating. The study surveyed 800 likely voters in September of 07, October of 07, July of 08. September of 07, July of 08, October of 08, as well as January of 09. And what the study did mostly was to contrast sort of two different thinking about the public healthcare option. They contrasted what could be described as sort of the progressive and inclusive model of the public healthcare option, and specifically the talking points of an organization called the American Health Insurance Plans, which is actually a private lobbying group, mostly representing private health insurers. So obviously private health insurers have a lot to say, as we heard today, about the public healthcare option. But I think it's important to know what voters respond to, because they're your constituents. It didn't matter in the study if you were a woman, a man, Republican, Independent, Democrat, whether you were over 55 or under 55, American voters overwhelmingly support a public healthcare option. They consider it to be a way to contain costs. They consider it a way to introduce competition into what has been thus far a largely absent in competition as far as containing costs. When specifically asked whether or not voters mind government involvement in the administration of a public health care option, voters do not mind that. They're not afraid of that, and actually they think that a non-profit government agency's role in the administration of a public health care option would seek to standardize, control costs, and actually introduce a more altruistic influence into the administration of health care. Voters are also They don't respond well to fear of loss, well with a public health care option. You know, private insurers will get out of the business or your employer will dump you off of their coverage. Voters don't respond to that. Voters, despite demographics or age, are very supportive of the public health care option. And I would just like to take the opportunity to remind you that I would seriously limit the role of private health insurers in their input in the creation of this plan. They obviously have a special interest in blocking it or limiting its efficacy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, do we have a testimony in writing?
We don't.
I submit a copy of the study as well as a summary. Thank you.
Good. Kevin.
Hi, my name is Kevin Maher from Grants Pass, and I apologize, I don't have anything in writing for you. I appreciate you all coming down, Representative Greenlee, for coordinating this. Sometimes we feel down here in Southern Oregon like we're the incredible shrinking man, and we're screaming out, and nobody's hearing us, but we're seeing more response, and we appreciate that. And thank you for your service to the community, too, Representative Maher. I'm speaking briefly as a small business person, and I see right now that and it's been this way, insurance for most self-employed people is they pay for it. So my first story with it is from 5 years ago when we got a little dog, a little puppy for my daughter, cost me $100, Rhodesian Ridgeback, and as it grew, it became stronger, and I grabbed it by the collar one day and hooked my arm around the post, and it snapped my bicep tendon. Oh. So I went and had this repaired to my fine orthopedist, who knows me well, and we had $5,000 deductible at the time. The operation and aftercare cost completely about $6,800. So my premium at the time was $600, so basically I looked at it, well, I paid the $5,000, then in 3 months I paid the $600, there's the $1,800. They all got their money one way or not, you know, somehow it was very, very expensive. So I have a $6,900 now 7-year-old Rhodesian Ridgeback, which I will gladly let go. I think that this impact, this story, no, I wouldn't. I'm a seller for the right price.
$7,000.
Right, about that. So right now it looks to me like a lose-lose-lose situation. Small business folks pay for their own insurance, and they pay high deductibles to get that, to keep it affordable. Secondly, the employees in the market which I have is what you might call entry workers. So I have a lot of part-timers. I would love to get health insurance for them, but when I can't afford it for myself, of course, for the employees makes it more difficult. This impacts my employees because they kind of go on and off the Oregon health plan. You know, it makes more sense to me to stabilize and standardize that. So if a person's making, and I don't know what your cutoff is, but they're making so much money, you give them a few more hours, and they go, oh, I don't want to do that because I'll go off the Oregon health plan. That is very detrimental to the business person. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't even schedule them for extra hours because we don't want to lose what they do have, if they have it. And then the third really big cost, the way I look at it, is that in addition to these costs that we pay as employers and as individuals for our personal health care and so on, we end up also then paying for folks who go into emergency when they don't have anything. And so we really get a lose-lose-lose situation. And I just would hope that you folks would consider, yes, when you do this, to think of the impact on the employees at the bottom end of the spectrum. So,
thank you.
Love to go on, but thank you very much.
Thank you. Next panel, actually, any questions? John Watt, Sally Densmore, and Dave Price. Right. We have about 35 more minutes, and we are obviously not going to get through the entire list, but we're trying to bounce back and forth as best we can. John Watt is not here. He was here.
Yeah, I'm
you know what? Then let's go ahead and call Cindy McMurphy.
Begin.
Yes, ma'am. Thank
you. Good morning.
You.
My name is Sally Densmore. Welcome to Southern Oregon. Nice to have you here. My husband and I own Densmore Financial Services in Medford, and I make my living helping people find the best health insurance policy for
Excuse
that
me?
For their situation.
Could you move a mic a little
I'm
bit?
Always afraid to do this because of the feedback. Okay, but I have a soft voice. I will probably stun you and surprise many of my fellow insurance agents by stating that I actually welcome many of the reforms suggested by 2009. I've seen a lot of people fall through the cracks, and it's very frustrating. Fortunately, Oregon already has some wonderful programs, such as FIAP, which subsidizes insurance premiums for low-income Oregonians, and OMIP, high-risk pool. But I agree that primary care physicians should receive greater reimbursement, that there should be tighter controls on certificates of need to eliminate duplication. I think that electronic medical records and statewide pulse registries should be implemented. All of these are wonderful. And, of course, the greater transparency. But from what I can gather from the fuzzy outline provided in the bill, Oregonians would go to an insurance exchange, I presume online, and choose one of a range of health plan options. At this point, none of us knows how many such options will be offered, how they will differ in benefits and premium. But I can assure you that no matter how standardized the plans and how automated the system, people, particularly those who are currently uninsured, will need help understanding the following terminology, such as what's a copay, what's a deductible, coinsurance, out-of-pocket maximum. They need to understand the savings that they can realize by choosing an in-network provider or generic prescription drugs, how certain procedures are billed, in-office procedures or surgeries are billed differently, the importance of obtaining pre-authorization, why one plan might be a better fit. And that doesn't begin to address those who do not have access to a working knowledge of computers and an online system. Independent insurance agents and brokers currently provide all of these services for a small commission averaging 4 to 5%. And if the insurance exchange believes it can hire enough people to accomplish all of this customer care for less than this, I think they will be surprised. Right now, as independent entrepreneurs, we pay both sides of Social Security as well as our own health insurance. And as a state agency, the insurance exchange will have to pay the prevailing wage. They will have to pay as well as much richer employee benefits, including retirement plan, enjoyed by all state employees. Where is the savings? In the economic climate, I am hard-pressed to see how you can justify the extra expense. So I'd like you to look at that. And
thank you. Cindy, could you go next, please?
I've lived here in the Rogue Valley and Grants Pass area.
Oh, ma'am, could you introduce your name and where you're from?
My name is Cindy McMurphy, and I'm from Southern Oregon, and welcome. I went to Williams Elementary School, Lincoln Savage, and Grants Pass High School. I've been very local. I would like to just really give some testimony about preventative care and that it must be included. I'm one of these obese people that have not been able to get adequate coverage. It is killing people today. I weighed over 600 pounds. I've lost a huge amount of weight. And considering that I had good insurance companies, I had government insurance companies, which divided wards from condition to disease. And it was another way to discriminate against those of us that are different than others. I was not able to get adequate health care until I was 52 years old. Since that date, I've lost 320 pounds. Right now, the way the system is, my daughters, both of them, have the same disease that I have. They are dying. Their claims have not been accepted. They have been thrown out.
and they don't count. Mind you, there are five small grandchildren that are looking at their moms, and they're dying. It's sad. We are not included and given a fair shake to adequate health care. And it's been going on for a long time, and this needs to change. We deserve to be covered, and that all people should be included. I'm testimony that I'm up and I'm getting well, and hopefully one day I'll return to the working public, which for my age I probably have put about 40 years in, and to know that I have not been able to get coverage even when I had it. So I support Oregon Action. I support all of you. And I know that if we can change some of the things and tweak the things that need to be tweaked, that we're going to build a healthy community, a healthy state, and very strong families. And we have to remember that the soda pop companies did not tell us that when we drank their products in the 1960s, that they were going to do irreversible damage to our stomachs and cause physical problems. In 1963, I believe, you know, you were lucky to get one or two 12-ounce knee highs a week. You go to 7-Eleven and it's a 64-ouncer how many times a day? Now you can imagine what that's going to do to your children. And how about holding some of those corporations damn well accountable? Because it's not happening. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Mr. Price?
Dave Price. Grants Pass, I've been an insurance agent for 26 years, and proud to say I think I've helped into the 1,000 or so people to obtain health insurance. And I probably am approaching this maybe a little bit like Sally, but similar anyway. I think people who don't have health insurance and who need health insurance, I think we need to do all that we can to see that they get health insurance. By the same token, I think individuals have an accountability there to help out in the system that we provide. We're a free enterprise system. I think, as Ron mentioned, at the end of the day, someone still has to pay the taxes. I'm all for helping those who need the help. I am not for an advocate of helping those who do not want the help and help and who do not want to contribute to our system. There, how is our system, this new system, going to work? We really don't know. We have ideas that have been proposed. We're advocating a system that really hasn't been tried and studied out thoroughly. I would like to suggest that we have at least a two-year study program to see how this is going to work, see how efficient we can make it, how practical it's going to be, and then report back to the study group, to the legislature, and not just throw out the everything and toss in a new system. We already have a statewide system of insurance professional agents and insurance medical staff and office staff that are trained to help people. And I think Sally kind of indicated that. I go out, probably have hundreds of people that have said, you know, I don't understand this. I would like someone to sit down and go through it with me. That's what we feel that we're trained to do, and help people make decisions. And again, I'm saying that people who don't can afford health insurance, we do need to help. I'm all for that. If there are problems with our existing system, then I think we need to look at what we need to do to repair it and make it like you want it to be. But I'm not for just scrapping it for an untried, new idealistic program that we do not know how it's going to work. I do not feel that we can go to the federal government every time that we want to and say, bail us out. We've seen that. We're seeing that right now. The federal government cannot do everything for us. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
I'd like to make a comment.
Yes.
The bill in its current, or at least the proposed amended form, does exactly what you suggest. It gives the health authority 2 years to produce a plan to study that and to come back to the legislature in 2011. So that's exactly where we think we're going with it.
Thank you. Next panel is Victoria Pruitt, Lowell Gibson, and Carolyn Cohn. Go ahead, introduce yourself.
I will start. Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Greenlake, Vice Chair Maurer, and Harker. My name is Victoria Pruitt. I am with the Oregon Small Business Healthcare Initiative. We are a group that's formed to give a single voice to small businesses from around the state. We also have a mission to be diverse based on business base, geography, and cultural diversity based on businesses. I'm also, even though we're based in Portland, I'm proud to be a Southern Oregonian and a Medford graduate, and come from proud pioneer stock. So I'm glad to be here representing the state and its small businesses. I also grew up with a beauty shop in my backyard and a real estate office in my front my front door with a shingle outside. So just to give some perspective. Oregon Small Business Healthcare Initiative was actually formed out of the Oregon Small Business for Responsible Leadership. They gave quite a deal of input and testimony into SB 329. And have also given support and testimony for the Oregon Health Fund Board. So there's been input there. I want to give you some statistics about Oregon small businesses and some of the impact to small businesses of healthcare costs. And Lowell is here to speak and give a perspective on his issues or his experience with small business, and you've heard from a couple others here as well. And Representative Harker mentioned that you were a small business person with impacts and experience. 98% of Oregon small businesses are fewer than 100 employees. Over 50% of those have fewer than 10 employees. And of that, 54% contribute to payroll tax. 54% of the payroll revenues for the state come from small businesses. And that does not include sole proprietors. That's only people reporting having an employee and paying into the workers' comp system. So there's a lot more than that potential for those who are working as individual contractors and sole proprietors as far as input and a revenue base for the state. The cost of insurance for those small businesses, over the last 10 years, most of them have seen double digits. 12%, 10%. Few are fewer than 10%. And in the last couple years, they are screaming because they are seeing 20-plus percent in increases. It's just not sustainable. And many of them are having to make very tough choices. $5,000 deductibles, you heard it here earlier. And the shift has been onto the small business, but it's also now becoming a shift onto the employee. Or the small business not offering it. A national study done by the Small Business Majority, which is a group that does advocacy at the national level, did a study that was sponsored by Blue Cross Blue Shield where 57% in 2000 of small businesses offered insurance. It's now down to 48. We see it as a tipping point and that more and more businesses are hitting that point where they are not competitive and are having to make very tough decisions in regard to health care for their employees. Key things for SBHI, to look at cost containment that currently isn't in the bill. I'll speak quickly. Lower premiums are a must. A sustainable solution. Small businesses want to be a part of that solution and they want to offer health care for their employees. They look at their employees as a family, but they believe that it should be shared and not all fall on small businesses. Thank you very much.
Oh.
Thank you very much for coming down to our neck of the woods. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. My name is Lowell Gibson. I'm a small business person. I own a small manufacturing company here in Grants Pass called Recognition Specialties. I have 25 employees. Purchased the business back in 2000. I have been providing health insurance for my employees since that time. And I've been self-employed for 20 years and health insurance has been one of those. It's a real issue, and it does affect affects my bottom line. It has been as high as up to 6% of my gross receipts. It is something that has increased over the years, anywhere from 8% to 30%, depending on what it is. In business, we make decisions on a daily basis for what's in the best interest of my company, my employees, my customers. It is crucial to me that we have the choices to be able to make those proper decisions. In order to keep the cost down, at times I've had to look at the plans, the policies. I've worked closely with my local insurance agent to look at all the different available policies, the different companies, and to see what suits my employees the best. So I'll keep it simple. From a business perspective, it is an important issue. It's for me, I want to provide for my employees, but I also need the choices to be able to do that that adapts best to my business. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Carolyn Cohn, and I live here in Grants Pass, serving as a community advocate. I served on the Delivery Systems Committee under the direction of the Health Fund Board, which was guided by 2007 legislation. The recommendations of the Health Fund Board are now ready to be implemented. This is the reason why we're here today, as House Bill 2009 and other implementation bills are coming before you. It is critical that changes that are made are done to make sure that they appropriately incorporate the Health Fund Board recommendations, that they meet legal requirements, and they provide more specific details. I believe all Oregonians would agree to the Health Fund Board's triple aim goals of improving health, improving the experience of the process, and creating cost efficiencies. The process of achieving these goals is a complex matrix. Therefore, substantive changes should be not made, as they would compromise the entire reform process. Many will lobby for changes, as each stakeholder will find something that, taken separately from the entire package, they could perceive as inappropriate. In my experience on the Delivery Committee and as an Oregonian, I believe that the current dismal economic times only add to the urgency to move forward. The Health Fund Board final recommendations, and therefore the intent of these proposed bills, reflect both what we desire and what we need. First, Oregonians want to be involved. That was clearly demonstrated by the commitment of over 100 volunteers representing diverse perspectives on the committees, and over 2,000 Oregonians who provided feedback during the process. Recognition of this desire for involvement led to the inclusion of the community collaboratives as a way for communities to fine-tune and prioritize their approaches to health. Secondly, Oregonians deserve transparency. By this, I mean knowledge about potential costs and outcomes. While there is an acknowledged need for providers who apply both the science and the art of medicine, there is also a recognized need for identifying and utilizing evidence-based care models. Therefore, greater use of appropriate technology is planned to document outcomes, provide coordination, and streamline paperwork. Lastly, research has shown time and time again that having a medical home leads to better health. The proposed medical home model promotes prevention and includes mental and dental health. Recommendations call for reversing the current shrinking pool of primary care providers and expanding other partnerships. A key strategy identified by the Health Fund Board to achieve its goal is bring everyone under the tent. This strategy is applied in several critical ways: to ensure all Oregonians have basic health coverage, and also to bring all the health-related functions of boards, commissions, and state agencies together to work more effectively. The creation of the Oregon Health Authority has drawn fire, but instead of creating another bureaucracy, it will consolidate and eliminate redundancies in order to realign for more effective action. The Oregon Health Authority will have great responsibility, power, and accountability, all of which are needed to accomplish the job ahead. In summary, Oregonians want to be involved. Oregonians deserve transparency. Medical homes lead to better health, and we must bring everyone under the tent. Please keep integrity of purpose when considering the Health Fund Board recommendations before you. One must not allow self-serving special interests to pull it apart. I've also provided copies of my testimony and copies of a report from a healthcare community discussion we had here in December that demonstrate, again, how our community wants to be involved and how creative they can be. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Representative Parker.
Thank you. With a couple of small business people up here, I wonder if you might quickly give an opinion on if you have one as individuals and perhaps as a representative of the organization on HSA approaches to healthcare, health savings account coverage. If this is not something on your radar, then just tell me that.
Yeah. I do like the idea of HSAs. I believe that a choice to be able to self-insure to a certain point is good. The reason I haven't done so in the past is kind of twofold. One is sometimes with the type of employees I have, if they have a higher prescription need, for example, it doesn't quite pencil out. The other thing is it's a tough one sometimes to explain to all my employees exactly how it works. But that's probably the two reasons why I haven't done so far.
Okay, thank you.
And from the general's perspective for OSBHI, we are looking for options for small business. So if that's something that works for a business, that should be a part of the menu.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next group, Bill Ertl, Rick Jones, and Bill Guest. Okay. Then we'll have Mick Terry. And go ahead, introduce yourself and proceed.
My name is Bill Guest. I've traveled from Klamath Falls. I help manage a physician and hospital-owned health plan that's done help manage the Oregon Health Plan in Klamath Falls for the last 14 years. We've served over 32,000 individuals during that time in our community of 65,000. We are in general support of HB 2009. We are waiting for details to be ironed out by various committees. One of our concerns is that we continue to build on a success of the Oregon Health Plan, which was to keep local plans local. There is a fear of centralization, and the fact is that healthcare is very community-driven. It requires participation by physicians. I haven't heard too much talk today about physicians, but the reality is that for all that we want, we have to find willing physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants to provide the healthcare services. As we talk about the metaphor of canaries in the mines, one thing we have to do is have physicians that are willing to do this. And the fact is that a physician, after going to school for 7 or 11 years, graduates with $200,000 of debt, wants to be able to work in a community, wants to be able to earn enough money. And in our case, the way our healthcare system is currently structured, a physician can get, we'll call it a widget, they're called relative value units, can get paid from Blue Cross about $65, $68 to perform a set of services. Medicare will pay $38. Medicaid Oregon Health Plan fee-for-service will pay $26 for that service. A health plan contracting with the Oregon Health Plan will pay about $35. And the fact is that our doctors have to be willing to accept a lower payment, which they currently have done for many, many years, to provide services, say, to Oregon Health Plan enrollees. The trick of all this, from our point of view, is contracting with them is to get a fair balance, to say, will you please take your fair share, your fair mix of Medicare, Medicaid, and commercial insurance to do that. And as I'm starting to see, for the first time in 14 years, physicians saying, I'm sorry, Bill, I can't take Medicaid anymore. It's not paying enough. And this is the first time in 14 years, and this is throughout the state. And so it's important that your reforms include the fact that we have to find willing partners. And this is a national problem, not just a state problem, not just the county problem there. We are in favor of the efforts to look at integrating mental health and physical health. Administration, there is much waste in the system, we feel there, and that can be bettered through those stages there. An important part of this, of course, is to reduce the hassle factor for physicians. When you're paying them half as much as they can get from Blue Cross, which is the current case, then you need to make sure that you don't have more hoops for them to jump through, more difficulties, more work, more surveys, etc. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for coming down to our neck of the woods. I'm not here to
make a stand on the House bill. However, I had to make a difficult decision between the hearing on the tax on beer today. But since you were in my neck of the woods, I thought I'd come here. My name is Rick Jones. I'm the director of Choices Counseling Center. We are part of Oregon Health Management Services and have the pleasure of serving the Josephine County Drug Court. We provide services for folks who get arrested for DUI, and we also have a fairly large adolescent treatment program. And I'm also an active member in OPERA. You'll see before you a handout from that organization that has some bullet points that I won't bother to go over because I want to save some time. But I also wanted to focus on a couple other documents that you should have, because I think the Governor's Council distributed to all of you these. If you don't have them, please let me know, and I will certainly make sure that you get them.
I have two copies, I think.
Okay. The overkill. Just sitting here today, it dawned on me I needed to take a risk. just want to share with you that 33 years ago, I got adequate chemical dependency treatment. Later, actually became a tax-paying citizen, paying my health insurance premiums all these years, and for the last 20 years have been a high-risk cardiac patient. I've been in and out of the hospital, have had double-coverage health insurance all those 20 years, and so I actually a more of a success story regarding chemical dependency treatment than most. So I just really want to emphasize, first of all, I also want to thank you guys for helping us get through the end of the biennium without a major whack. Thank you. Yes. The governor's proposed budget on chemical dependency treatment is very dangerous to us. It doesn't hold children harmless. It actually enhances the fact that we're going to need more foster care. Residential treatment services cannot afford to be cut by 85%. We cannot survive that infrastructure blow. Outpatient treatment services are already operating in a lower segment in that we when someone comes to our office, we use the ASAM tool to make a decision about what level of care they need, but we're always having to step them down as a result of resources, particularly the 25-year-old white male who has no resources, who has no Oregon health plan, who comes in the door and needs some help. We usually have to slide their fees, and we usually end up providing them less care than probably what they could afford. I would ask folks to certainly review those cuts and to look at the, to borrow the governor's counsel, the domino effect. There's plenty of data available that treatment for chemical dependency does save $5 for every $1 spent.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I make a comment?
Yes.
I think it's important to recognize the interrelatedness, and I think that's why you're here, between substance abuse treatment and the Oregon Health Plan. When we had to cut 75,000 people out of the Oregon Health Plan standard, going from 100,000 to 24,000, we took 70% of the dollars for outpatient substance abuse treatment out of the system, that one cut. Putting back those 100, moving us back up to 100,000, or adding 100,000 adults, as we're trying to do here, would be the most important single piece of substance abuse treatment funding that that we could do.
Taking into consideration that some of the other cuts could destroy or compromise the infrastructure of that particular system, we have to be available to contract for those services for the Oregon Health Plan. And at the same time, sir, the indigent fund for DUII also went away, which was a whole another discussion. So thank you.
I have a relatively short statement. Sir, if you could introduce yourself.
Oh, sorry.
Mick Terry. I live in Merlin, just up the road over here. I've lived here since 1994. Japan has a national health care, as does Europe and Canada. This allows their industries to function at a much higher level than ours because they don't have to be concerned about health care costs. And this is a very important distinction, because if our industries didn't have to worry about health care costs, they could use their resources to launch us into the future industries that will make us the leader in the world again. In referencing the woman that spoke before, 70% of the people in this country want some type of health care, some type of national health care problem. And we're slowly putting the proper politicians in place to accomplish those goals. I believe eventually most politicians will see the writing on the wall, and I wonder if you guys do.
You see lots of writing. It's just hard to read what it's.
I get that. But I think it's becoming really clear. I know how easy it is to be out of touch with the plight of the people needing health insurance. I worked for a major corporation for 15 years and then had the rug pulled out from under me in so long. And when you leave that, when you've had that golden umbrella sitting out there in front of you and suddenly it's gone, it's a real big smack in the face. And the question is, have any of you people ever been without health care insurance at all? I mean, really, then you have an idea what it feels like. One thing that's frustrated me throughout a lot of this process, and maybe it's just ignorance on my part, maybe it's something I'm missing that I'm not hearing, or I haven't read the whole plan thoroughly or something like that, but ever since when we first moved down here and I got downsized, we were on the Oregon health care plan. But then we found out we were too liquid, and so they kicked us off because we had too much. We had more than $5,000 in the bank. And seeing how Social Security and Medicare isn't going to be there for me, I need to save every damn penny I can. So I save this money, but that goes against me so that I can't get on the Oregon health care plan. So my solution to that is, let me buy into it. Let me buy into the Oregon health care plan. Let me buy into Medicare. Let me buy into one of them at something commensurate with what I make. I think that's a fair way to go. And I'm really frustrated by that aspect of it that I haven't heard that mentioned. And maybe it's in there, maybe it isn't, but nobody talks about that. I'm willing to pay my fair share. I don't want something for nothing. This is America. I recognize that. And that's pretty much where I am coming from. The only other comment I had was the gentleman spoke earlier about this hasn't been tried, and that we should do a study. And if we sit on, and you commented, but I don't really know exactly what exactly that meant. Is this for the next 2 years we're going to be studying how to do this, or for the next 2 years we're going to do this, and then we're going to try and figure out, work the kinks out of it? Because I think that's the way to go. That's how I did my own business, because that's what I'm doing now, and I worked the kinks out as I went along. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We're going to go with, any questions? Thank you. We're going to go with
very quick comment. One other thing that I became aware of in one of the early conversations I had here as to who the uninsured are, it's our kids. Even if we have been fortunate enough to have coverage, when they, like my daughter who's turned 23 now, they can't find coverage, you know. So it's people from families who have always been covered are now part of the uninsured.
Scary.
Yeah.
Thank you. Patricia Garreau and Richard Cohen.
Over here to Patricia. Okay.
And this will be our last panel. And unfortunately, we are going to have to call it.
Because this gentleman is going to just succeed to me because I have to go to work in about 2 minutes. My name is Patricia Garreau. I live in Grants Pass, Oregon. I'm president of the National Alliance on Mental Illness for Josephine and Jackson County. First of all, I would like to say I have not read the 266 pages of this bill, but I would recommend that every word that says may be changed to shall. May means it might happen, and usually it doesn't, and shall means it shall happen. I'm here to speak for the most vulnerable in our state, the mentally ill. For thousands of years, they have been treated like third-class citizens and worse. The vicious cycle of how mental illness is treated by the medical and staff mental health systems and the insurance companies, you know, it honestly stinks. When mental health illness will strike one in every five persons and one in every four households in our lifetime, the psychiatric wards in our hospitals are closing down, and the others are slowly decreasing beds and help that was available. These problems are exemplified in our parks, under our bridges, in business doorways, in alleyways, deserted cars, and the many lost souls walking our freeways. This bill must include finances for dual diagnosis treatment. Approximately 50 to 65% of people who suffer from mental illness also have a drug or alcohol problem. Sadly, this also includes our children. These illnesses must be and should be treated simultaneously in the situation to, for their situation to improve. Oregon ranks 11th in our nation in suicides. There must be finances available in this bill to help erase this growing problem, especially among our teenagers. Did you know that the psychiatric drug that costs $600 to $800 a month in the state of Oregon costs approximately only $53 from Canada? And that includes the cost of shipping. There must be a clause that allows people to get their psychiatric drugs through Canada that will save the state of Oregon millions of dollars. Please keep the sliding scale portion in the bill intact. This will hopefully help thousands in our state get help for this illness and keep them from slipping through the cracks. Mental illness is only a chemical and physical imbalance of the brain. I stress the word illness because it is like diabetes, heart failure, cancer, muscular dystrophy, and so forth. And the millions of dollars seem to be available for these illnesses. Let's make it at least an even playing field. With this bill, you have the ability to start preventative measures instead of always putting too small of a Band-Aid on too old of a wound. Let's help them, the mentally ill, become a working part of our society, paying taxes, instead of draining the finances of the state by millions of dollars. And thank you for being here, and thank you for listening.
Thank you.
I'm Richard Cohen. I'm in Grants Pass. I was a member of the Quality Institute Working Group, whose labors form the basis of the Quality Care Institute section of HB 2009. I also have a master's degree in sociology, which leads me to believe that there's only one person who feels that this country has a medical care delivery system, and that's Rube Goldberg, and he's dead. There are those who see sinister designs in House Bill 2009. One newsletter states, "My concern is that we're going down a path that will ultimately lead to government restricting choices for individuals." I would suggest those with no health insurance coverage are more at risk than anyone else for losing those choices. And I would also suggest that there are situations where we should restrict choices for individuals, such as unrestricted access to embryo transplantation. 2009's detractors also object to the creation of an Oregon Health Authority with broad powers. I would point out that House Bill 2009 is the result of more than 100 Oregonians with the input of several hundred more working across the state in a pattern similar to that we did more than 20 years ago to create the Oregon Health Plan. Objections have been raised to major increases on taxes in our hospitals and insurance premiums. And with the four principles noted by Roy Vineyard earlier, I would offer this little story. A few years ago, I purchased a stack of CDRs for $14.99, having found a rebate available for $15. I thought that was a good deal, even though I could have spent $12.99 without a rebate. An even better deal exists for the state of Oregon than my CD bargain. Every dollar of medical care provider taxes can be matched by $1.66, and with the current new proposals from Washington, it appears that may be $2. And if we can provide $666 million, the feds will match that with over $1 billion. To those who express concern about the power of a new Oregon Health Authority to commit conspiracy, restrain trade, create monopolies, I would note that the wording of House Bill 2009 is exactly the opposite. If there are concerns to that regard, I would suggest that the opinion of the Oregon State Attorney General be sought. We now have the opportunity to remake Oregon healthcare into a logical, efficient, and cost-effective system that someone other than Rube Goldberg would appreciate. Let us move forward.
Thank you.
Thank
And that concludes the public hearing at this point. But before we close, I want to introduce in the back Bill Thorndike from Medford, who was in fact the chair of the chair of the Oregon Health Fund Board, and he kind of led the effort that that drew up House Bill 2009, although there's a few things that were added and maybe a few things taken out. At this time, I would ask our panel to make some brief comments before we close, if they so desire. And so, Representative Garrett, would you?
I'd just like to thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing us down here. This has been extremely valuable to hear, to have those personal faces put on the healthcare fiasco. I agree very much with the last witness that we don't have a healthcare system. We have a healthcare catastrophe, and we are working very hard to fix that.
Representative Thompson?
I do want to thank you for coming today. If it makes you feel any better, we're hearing the same kinds of comments from other people in other parts of the state. So you're not unique down here in your concerns. We have a problem. I think the biggest issue that we have to deal with is twofold. First of all, we have to figure out how to reduce the cost of health care, because we can't afford it. We can't afford to pay for it anyway we go about it. There's too many dollars involved. And then secondly, we have to find an equitable way to pay for a less expensive health care system without eroding the quality. And it's really an enormous task, because both of those have eluded everybody for a long time. Hopefully 2009 will address that, but it's still early.
Representative Parker?
Thanks. Thanks to everyone for coming. I think, as I said to someone earlier, I feel comfortable wherever I am. I don't see differences in the faces and the stories and the lives here versus Beaverton, where I spend more of my time. I think I speak on behalf of everyone on this committee, whether they're in the room or not. We understand the enormity of what we're facing. We understand the critical importance of what we're trying to accomplish and what we're wrestling with, and I am very impressed with the caliber of the people that you folks have representing you in particular, and with the rest of the people on this committee and in this body. Thanks a lot.
Chair Greenman.
Thank you very much, Representative Maurer. I too want to thank you and Allison, who's done a lot of the work in helping to organize this, to make us feel so welcome. It's really very nice to be here. Every time I'm down here, I find it very, very nice. And I also want to comment on commending Mr. Thorndike, who was a very important force in guiding a process that was a very complicated process and producing a very good product. Your words today will echo in the halls of the State House. We just so believe how important it is for citizens to come and talk to us. We get hundreds of emails a day. We get lots of letters, but there's nothing like personal testimony to hear what's on people's minds. And the testimony, I think, represented the complexity of what it is we're trying to do. And it's very important to hear this from all sides. We are going to do something. This has been going on since I sat on the group that founded the Oregon Health Plan in 1988, and it's been a 20-year quest with ups and downs and moving towards the specific proposals that are in 2009, and a few other bills, incidentally, because everything's not in 2009, has been part of a quest since we tried to save the Oregon Health Plan in 2003 by creating OHP standard. It is a process, but it is time for something to happen. We're working to try and find a ground where all of us can stand on. We're doing everything possible to make that happen, but to move in a serious way in the right direction. We do need to find a way to sustainably do what we're trying to do. That means, as the Health Fund Board said, bending the cost curve, increasing the quality, finding a way to provide enough manpower so that if we had 600,000 more people in the health insurance system, we'd be able to provide care for them, and moving toward the objective in the health fund board, which is to get 90% of the uninsured covered by the year 2015. Those goals are all in our mind, and we're working very hard, and you helped us along the way by being with us this morning, and I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, thank you for your support to bring this down here, and Sandy and your team. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to bring this down. Thank you. Doing your job. I want to thank everybody that came here today and had an opportunity to speak, and I apologize for those who did not. I think, though, that a lot of the voices here are silent. We are not hearing a lot of voices that, in fact, quite frankly, are concerned about the language of the bill. And in fact, the bill, even though it says it in a negative way, it does say that the Oregon Health Authority can conspire, and it's been confirmed that way. And I think we talked about that, and it's going to be
struck. The language is going, right? Yeah.
It's going. So we acknowledge that. And that there are, in fact, a lot of people that are concerned about a government control of the healthcare system, that those voices sometimes are quiet, but they're a lot of the people that are paying into the system today, and unfortunately couldn't be here because many of them are at work, and today is my work here. But you know that this is a conversation that's going to go on for a long time. House Bill 2009 is not the end state. Whether it passes or not. In fact, I think it probably will pass at some level. But there's also a series of governor's bills that, in fact, take a look at issues of health information technology, transparency, PULSED, which is an end-of-life issue, which clearly there's no one in opposition to that, and some other things. And those are all important, and it's a package. And I don't, you know, you can say, oh, we want to flip the switch tomorrow and change the system, but the reality is it's not going to happen. That we are going to build or hopefully change the system we have today. Because, in fact, I do think there is a system. It may not make sense, but there is something out there. Otherwise, people wouldn't be leaving the hospital fixed.
And it would be easy to change if it wasn't the system.
Well, you're correct, but there's...
And it's not easy to change.
It is not easy to change for 100 reasons, but we do need to change because it is not sustainable. We cannot afford it. We have too many uninsured in the state of Oregon and across this country. But on the other hand, you can't say there is no limit. We never say no because we are going to have to say no. In the plan, Medicaid managed care says no quite often. Medicare says no, but sometimes it says yes for the wrong things, and we need to change that. Private insurance companies tell people no, but they also pay for a lot of things that, quite frankly, they shouldn't be paying for. But those are questions that are hopefully not political. Unfortunately, they're politicized. It needs to be about the reality. All I can say is, you know, it's an interesting day to be in the Oregon legislature. Besides the budget woes that we all kind of seem to overshadow, us on the health care committee are dealing with some pretty fundamental changes in our society. And it's all linked. This is not, you can't just pick health care and talk about health care without talking about jobs and every other social ill that we have. But thank you for coming, and I hope you got something out of it, and have a great day.
Real quick.
Oh, yes, hold on. I'm sorry, before we gavel out.
Yeah, just for the record, we passed out two pieces of testimony that the folks did not have a chance. So it's written for the record. It is from Nan Trout and then Rich Rohde, both on HB 2009. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And we close the public hearing on House Bill 2009.